Oye. 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 Welcome to the Ten Creek to West Slough Quay walking route.
Our aim is to help residents and visitors to Slough to fully appreciate the natural beauty of our wonderful Cornish countryside and to unlock the secrets of its rich cultural history, both in the past and the present.
Walkers can access this route from the west along the A387 from Plint and Polperro, or from Talland and the southwest coast path. From the Slough Gateway sign, head a short distance eastwards to the first junction and take the first turning left. Pause a moment at the small island of grass at the signpost to the walking route into Slough.
This point is known locally as Pulpits and is where it is thought that John Wesley, founder of the Methodist movement, preached on his first visit to Slough. Local historian and long-time West Slough resident Jean Dingle explains the significance of this spot and the importance of the Wesleyan legacy in Cornwall.
I'm going to lead you from the road leading off the Slough Polperro Road around the corner to a place known as Ten Creek, and from there to a small patch of grass where stands a memorial stone to John Wesley. Now, John Wesley was a Methodist preacher, and I understand he came to Cornwall on 31 occasions between 1743 and 1789. He often had his brother with him and others. And the important thing about him was that he came on horseback, right down through what would have been a very wild Cornwall at that time, preaching the gospel and hoping that the local people would respond to his preaching. Most of his work was done down further west, where the miners and the fishermen had lost all contact with their church following the Reformation. So he had a lot of work to do there, a lot of drunkenness and bad behaviour, but he made a great impression. Now, I understand he came to Slough on September the 4th, 1746, and he dined in Wesley Terrace. Now, I'm sure Wesley Terrace was named after that occasion because it's a terrace of houses in Shutter Road. And I imagine whoever was playing host would have felt pretty proud to have entertained John Wesley. The only problem was that the mayor of Slough forbade him to preach within the town. And that is why we get this stone at the top of West Slough Hill and the area known as Pulpit, because John was just on the boundary of Slough and Port Slough, and this is where he preached. So he didn't actually preach in the town, but up here in the area known as Pulpit. He had a great influence throughout Cornwall. They say Methodism was born of song, and that is true, because his brother Charles wrote loads of wonderful hymns, and we still sing them today. Down in the Riverside Church during the summer months on a Sunday evening, and we're still singing those hymns. Love Divine, All Loves Excelling, Ye Servants of God, and the most popular one and the most famous one of Charles Wesley's hymns, And Can It Be? Now, John Wesley was not only a local preacher, but he was also a social reformer and a tireless worker for the poor, the sick, and the underprivileged. He wrote a book called primitive physic. And I have a copy here, and it contains all these wonderful remedies for the various illnesses that you might have. Let me see if I can find a quick one. Let's see, a cold in the head. 2 pennyworth of tarred twine worn round the neck in a white bag will prevent a cold leaving the head and entering the chest. Or pare very thin a yellow rind of an orange, roll it up inside out, and thrust a roll into each nostril. Or boil a handful of rosemary in a quart of spring water or water from a holy well. Put it in a jug and hold the head covered with a cloth over the steam as hot as you can bear it. And finally, rub the chest with a tallow candle at night and you will quickly lose your cold. Now, this little book contains many, many remedies for the normal illnesses that we have even today, and quite a few of them, strangely enough, are pretty similar to the ones we apply today. Later on, you will be walking down Westland Hill, very steep hill, and you will see on the right, I'm sure whoever's with you or telling you, you will see the Salem Chapel. Now, this was the first little meeting house of the Methodist in Westloo. Later, as the congregation grew and they had the money, you will see at the bottom of Westloo Hill, on the left, a mighty building which was Westloo Methodist Church, but unfortunately today is known as Dingle's Folly and is a set of flats. On the other side of the river, Shutter Road, is the first Wesleyan church in Loo. Again, unfortunately, no longer a church. Today there's not the same following, I'm afraid. But all over Cornwall, if you're travelling around, look out for these small, little, very primitive buildings that the early Methodists put up. And most of them were built by their own hands.
The single track road now twists and turns down a gentle incline towards Westloo in an area of Westloo called Portloo. Boatyards are usually situated very close to the water, but Portloo Boatyard is an exception in that it sits on the top of the coastline overlooking Tallon Bay, hidden behind the high Cornish hedgerows. Local man James Porter is continuing a family boat building tradition.
Loo in the summer seems to be a very busy place with passengers and holiday makers in general, but in the winter it seems to be very quiet and ghostly like, but it's also very busy if you go to the right places. In the boatyards in general, we maintain quite a few of the passenger boats and the little ferry boats, the wooden boats in Loo. Just taking on Loo Island as a job, Loo Island boatman. The type of things you'll see on Loo Island, you've got three houses to look at. You've got the Customs House, next door to Smuggler's Cottage, which is a bit of irony. You've got lots of seals out there, seabirds, you've got gannets, greater black-back gulls, plenty of seagulls, which Cornwall's famous for its seagulls. So you've got lots of fish as well, which you can see nowadays from the glass-bottom boats. So I've built two of the glass-bottom boats here in Loo. That's gone down very well. One of them now is down in the Scilly Isles, which is quite unique. Loo is, I think, as good as the Scillies, if not better in some respects, in the fact that you've got the island, which is nice and shallow out here. You've got plenty to look at, and the fact that you've got such a mixed variety of sea life with the seaweed, plenty of fish to look at.
Further on from the boatyard opposite Colt Cottage is a right turn that will take you back to the road to Talland, itself well worth a visit. The Cornish Hedge is unique as a man-made wildlife refuge, with everything needed for the full cycle of life that it supports: earth, stone, crevices, damp and dry, shelter, decaying matter, and a huge variety of plant life from microscopic fungi to forest trees. Aiding this amazing variation of species and habitat is the mild Cornish climate, which favours activity all the year round. Mark Camp is an expert on the diversity of Cornish hedges, and he's going to tell us about them between Ten Creek and West Loo.
This lane was, until the middle of the 1800s, the main route into Loo from the west. Keeping high above the wet and boggy valleys, it followed the coast from the ferry crossing at Foy into Loo and on towards Plymouth. It was also the route to the parish church at Talland, tucked away in a steep-sided coombe leading down to the bay. The people of West Loo required to walk 3 miles to worship. No wonder they built a chapel on the quayside at West Loo. Today, the lane tends to be a quiet route, with a majority of traffic using the new road into Loo. But please still be careful and listen out for cars as you walk along. The lane is flanked by Cornish hedges, annoyingly high at times when all you want to do is enjoy the view, but there's a reason for this. The Cornish hedge is built to protect. They keep the Atlantic winds from flattening the crops, they stop the soil being carried away by the winter rains, and to house a multitude of insects, animals and birds who all help in what is an important ecosystem. Despite appearances, the Cornish hedge is actually a wall. Deep inside the grassy bank is a stone heart, broad at the bottom, tapering upwards. A sudden shock to any motorist who has the misfortune to hit one. Depending on which time of the year, the kaleidoscope of colours from the hedgerow flowers ranges from the white of the snowdrops to the purple of the foxgloves. In between, the creamy yellow primroses carpet the lower banks. The daffodils, or lent lilies as they are known, bob in the spring air. Wild garlic, also known as ransoms, fill the air with a pungent aroma, their white flowers contrasting with the bluebells as spring turns to summer. And then the foxgloves arrive, shooting skywards to escape the dense covering that by midsummer the hedge is clothed in. Other plants and ferns you will see as you wander along the lane, including the prickly furze or gorse, its yellow flowers giving off an aroma of coconut. Folklore states that when gorse is in blossom, kissing's in fashion. We have two types of gorse around Loo. One flowers in the summer, one in the winter. No wonder we're such a friendly lot.
Having passed Port Loo Barton Farm, we are now standing on the hillside overlooking West Loo. The Port Loo or Port Loo Celtic Cross is a strange historical artefact set into the hedge. The details have been worn away by centuries of weather, but it still exudes a strange power.
Wayside crosses were erected across Cornwall in the 9th, 10th, 11th century, as we would erect signposts these days, as a way of showing you you were on the right route from church to church, from village to village. You could say your prayers when you got to them to thank the Lord that you got there safely and to also thank the Lord that you would be safe for the next part of your journey onto the next church or village. The cross here at Port Loo was found in the 1930s, buried in the soils nearby. It's very much hidden in the hedge here. It's one of those things that unless you know it's there, it's very easy to miss.
The road narrows and steepens now as we approach West Loo Hill itself. On the hillside, on the right, you will see a tower. If you walk the coastal path to Loo, you will find two more towers on the hillside above Hannafore and two more at Talon Bay. These are measured mile markers used by ships to calculate their speed.
On the hillside to the right, you will see a tower. This is one of four between Loo and Polperro, built originally in 1904 by the Navy. They are used, and still used, by ships coming out of Plymouth Dockyard to test their speed over what is a nautical mile, slightly longer than a land-based mile. The idea is that the ships join up the two posts near Loo, then speed down the channel to when they pass the two posts at Talland. When they were first put up in 1904, the local fishermen were very much against them. They said at first that they would spoil the countryside, and then later said that they would scare all the fishing away, these huge great battleships steaming up and down the channel.
Walkers should take care now, as the road is a single track with very high hedges and sharp bends. The junction at Downs Park Road leads to another much-loved vantage point in West Loo, an open space known as the Downs.
John Currer recounts childhood memories of the Downs area of West Loo and the work of West Loo Town Trust, a charity charged with overseeing this elevated area of West Loo.
I'm born and bred in West Loo. I've lived here all my life, and I'm currently the clerk of the West Loo Town Trust. who own an area known as the Downs. As you come down the hill into Westloo, at the top of Westloo Hill, you turn left at Downs Lane, and this lane brings you straight onto the top of the Downs. This area of land was given to the people of Westloo in 1873 in a conveyance from the Duchy of Cornwall. The land originally was used for grazing, and until the Second World War, that was its main use. At the same time, the top area of the Downs was used for as a sports field for the Loo School, which was in West Road. In fact, during my childhood, the whole of the top of the Downs was constantly in use by 20 to 30 Westloo boys playing football and arguing, and then playing football yet again. There was also the annual bonfire was put up there on Westloo, which very often got burnt down by the boys from Eastloo. So we then had to visit Eastloo to burn theirs down, although I'm not admitting this. The area sort of spreads down over the hill, facing mainly southeast. And from the top, you've got brilliant views in every direction of the Eastloo River, the harbour, and Loo Bay. As you approach the centre of the Downs, you'll see a TV mast. And below there is a small wooded area known as the Influence Glade. This was created in the early 1980s, and the idea was that as children were born to Loo families, their names would be placed on plaques within this wood. Over time, the plaques have disappeared, but the wood is still worth a few minutes' stroll. As you get below the woods, to the east side of the woods, you'll come down onto a hard road, which is Downs Road. All the way along this road, there are seats in various significant points where you get the best views of the harbour, the river and the bay. The original extent of the Westloo Downs reached right down into Poline Creek and right onto the Westloo River. The present northwestern boundary of the Downs is part of an ancient earthworks known as the Giant's Hedge, which is reputed to have run from Lerin to Loo.
Back to Westloo Hill, and rounding the next sharp corner, the fantastic vista of the East Loo roofscape unfolds before you, and the coastline towards Seaton, Downderry and Rame Head in the distance. For weary travellers, a seat awaits. We are now entering the more residential area of the walk, the age and style of the houses mapping the development of the Westloo from the bottom up, with the newest homes at the top. Often the names of the houses reflect the building's former use. Edwina Hannaford has been helping the traders of Westloo promote this distinctive part of Loo, often described as a village within the town of Loo or the Artisan Corner.
We are now entering the historic core of Westloo and the shopping centre. Some people have described Westloo Square and Princess Square as a village within a town or the Artisan Corner. The atmosphere in Westloo is quieter than its neighbour in Eastloo across the water, yet deceptively has a very diverse and wide range of shops and attractions. These shops range from hairdressers, a beautician, foot care, optician and sports injury specialist, to a delicatessen, picture framing, tea rooms, soft furnishings and even solar panel sales. At the bottom of Westloo Hill is a distinctive building called the Roundhouse. This building has been a meat market, florist and even a chip shop over the years, and it's owned by Westloo Town Trust. If you look over the door, you will see the crest of the Trust, the Mariner Archer. The worn slate floor gives a clue to the building's age. This part of Westloo is called Princess Square, with Princess Street leading off to the north. The Jolly Sailor pub is the dominant feature and one of the oldest pubs in the country. In fact, it's featured on the Will's cigarette card collection called 40 Oldest Inns. Affectionately known by locals as the Jolly, over the centuries since 1516, it's been a place of rest and recreation for seafarers and travellers alike. Westloo was granted a charter in 1574 by Queen Elizabeth I, The charter's main points include that Westloo for all future times hereafter be and remain a village of peace and quietness. Westloo shall be a free borough incorporating a mayor and burgesses. The mayor to be assisted by 12 men discreet and honest who are to be called chief burgesses and will act as common council for the public benefit. There shall also be a market every Wednesday and one fair lasting 3 days on the feast of St. Mark the Evangelist. St. Mark's Fair has been called the May Fair since it usually falls within the first week of May. Although an earlier fair can be traced back to 1235, when the Lord of the Manor of Portallant obtained various privileges from the Earl of Cornwall, including a weekly market and annual fair. I am very proud to have resurrected this ancient tradition of a May Fair on the first Saturday in May. The first modern day fair was held in 2010. The modern interpretation of this fair still includes stalls and games, with maypole dancing, a green man, and various forms of musical accompaniment. In the early days of Westloo, it was known as Port Biggin, meaning Little Port. This name lives on in the name of the Port Byan Hotel on the harbourside. From Princess Square, you can walk through, past the fire station, to what is known as Westloo Square. Straight ahead of you is the ferry steps, where small boats transport foot passengers across the water to Eastloo. To the left and northwards is a relatively modern building called Riverside Court, housing flats with shops and cafe underneath. Turning left again is Westloo Quay and Quay Road. The shops here include a tea shop, hairdressers, a local charity shop, a shop that specialises in decorative painting for sale, and a shop that specialises in crystals, minerals, and Cornish and fair trade artwork and jewellery. Round the back of the roundhouse in Church Street, beside the fire station, partway along is a very steep, narrow lane called Hannafore Lane. Although this lane is steep, the effort would be well rewarded, with some stunning and unique views of the harbour, and further along, the beach, Banjo Pier, and Loo Bay. The lane is not suitable for vehicles and takes you eventually to Hannafore. Turning right and southwards, you can follow the river along a harbourside path known as Pennyland, next to St. Nicholas Church. The church is dedicated to St. Nicholas, Bishop of Myra, the 4th century saint, who is probably more famously known as Santa Claus. The church was built sometime in the 13th or 14th century and has had a varied history, originally being part of the parish of Talland. It is often referred to as the Fisherman's Church and is open daily. There is some disagreement on why it's called Pennyland. Some say it's because the boatmen used to charge a penny to cross the river. Others say the name is rooted in the Cornish language with a literal meaning of end of land. Pennyland has beautiful views out to the estuary, to the mouth of the river and the Banjo Pier. But beware, there are no barriers between you and the river. This delightful walk takes you past a bronze life-size statue of a much-loved citizen of Loo, namely Nelson, the one-eyed seal. For many years, Nelson was popular and much-loved regular visitor to the harbour. He was so named because he'd lost his one eye in an injury or accident. Local sculptor Susie Marsh gave her services free of charge in making the sculpture, and the costs of casting and sighting the bronze statue were met from grants and donations from many charitable and other bodies and individuals. Sadly, Nelson has gone to that great ocean in the sky, but now is fittingly commemorated by this handsome life-size statue in the harbour, which was formally unveiled in 2008 by Sir Robin Knox Johnson, a famous sailor. The statue is now a favourite ride for young children, the oil from many hands giving him a shiny back. You are now on the southwest coast path. The Coast Path is the longest of the country's national trails, with a length of 630 miles. The stretches around Loo are some of the loveliest. The path continues up some steps to Hannafore Road and an area known as Hannafore, with Talland and Polperro westwards beyond. Hannafore boasts some stunning uninterrupted views over Loo Bay and Loo Island, with a selection of cafes, ice cream kiosks, B&Bs, hotels and a pub. The manicured formal flower beds and promenade walkway give the area a tranquil ambience. The foreshore is ideal for rock pooling and has a small strip of coarse sandy beach. The area is now a conservation area based on its archetypal 30-star layout, complete with crescents, tennis courts, bowling and putting green. Hannafore is often overlooked by visitors as it's hidden round the headland. West Loo has much to offer and is well worth a visit.
We are now nearing the end of our walk with the South West Coast Path, following the estuary to the west via Pennyland, or east via the passenger ferry that links the twin communities of East and West Loo. Jeff Penhaligon is the present harbour master, who ensures the smooth and safe running of the harbour from the bridge to 1,000 yards past Loo's unusual Banjo Pier.
Loo is a traditional Cornish fishing port. We're famous for our day caught fish, so fish landed today will be on the market tomorrow morning and could well be in a restaurant in Manchester by tomorrow night. None of this fish is frozen, none of this fish is iced down on boats for 10 days like other larger trawlers. Of course, a lot of our stuffed fish is exported as well, so some of the cuttle and things like that you could well be eating if you take a Spanish holiday in your paella, because we exported most of it to France and to Spain, which is unusual. Most of our boats here are under 10 metres. They do trawling, netting, which is either fixed net out in the bay, or by hand line. And then we have a few crabbers as well, which catch crab and lobsters, which are some processed on the quay. If you look down the quay, there's those nippers. That's a new company. They process all the meat, and they got a little place down by the harbour office where you can have a little taste of it if you want to. One of the major pastimes of holidaymakers here, because it's probably the cheapest holiday thing you can ever do, is crabbing off the quay. You could go and buy a line, and I suggest you buy one with a little bag on it, not with a hook, because you don't need the hook to catch crabs. Get a little bit of bait, and my preference is bacon, believe it or not, though everybody will try everything else, and just dangle it over the quay and watch the crabs come in. But please don't take them home with you, just put them back into the river, because if they take them home, they'll stink. If you look across the river there to West Loo, is our visitor's berth. We have to accommodate up to 6 visiting yachts at any one time. Unfortunately, you've got to take the bottom. Loo dries out and it puts a lot of yachtsmen off. But I've found that the majority of people, once they find us once, they tend to stay for 3 or 4 days and actually enjoy it, because they're right in the hub of the harbour here, and they get a warm welcome. Just remember, the tide rate coming in on a big spring tide is quite vicious. If you've never experienced it before, I suggest you come in at the top end of the tide when the tide is slack. And watch the back eddies as well, because you might be coming in on one bit of it and the other part of the harbour is actually going out. It's quite deceiving. So just give us a phone call at the harbour office and I'm sure we'll give you all the advice we can. The history of Loo is quite remarkable. It's not laid in the fishing industry at all. It's actually laid in the copper mines and the granite quarries of Carradon. And at one time we had a railway line from all the way from the Cheese Ring Quarry down to the end where the lifeboat house is now. And if you continue down where the Banjo Pier was a long time ago in the 1800s, there was a proposal there to extend the breakwater on the right hand side, and that would have given us a deep water access. And in the centre of the river we're supposed to have a centre island very similar to what you've got at Newquay at the moment. Unfortunately, due to the dropping copper prices and the collapse of the granite quarries, it never got off the ground. We literally ran out of money.